Shalom. Hello again. We're back with Ibrahim Abdullah, one of the good guys, one of my Arab friends, one of my Muslim terrorists become Christian friends. You were a real Muslim terrorist up to a whole lot of mischief as a kid over there in the Palestinian areas in Jerusalem, or in Israel. Now you've come to Christ.
Yes, I did, though. Thank God.
Yeah. I'm so glad of that.
It was a big weight. It's like a weight was taken off. The burden was lifted. Never saw it. I was scales were on my eyes. They were lifted off.
Well, you were born a cousin, but now I welcome you as a brother.
Thank you.
You were born and raised in Dearborn, Michigan, so you're an American, and that's what I wanted to take up with you. You're an American of Palestinian extraction. But, you know, I see what's going on in the Middle East. That's clear to everybody who watches the news. But what's going on in America is not so clear. Tell me about, you know, when Shannon and I went to speak in Minneapolis, they told us there were 50 mosques in that city, smaller than Dallas. I think we have two or three mosques.
Yeah.
Number one, why are the Arabs who are desert people collected along the northern border of Dearborn, Detroit, Minneapolis? Number two, what goes on in those mosques?
Well, first of all, if you follow the Arab immigration, it started in the 30s and 40s. Uh-huh. They came to work at the car factories, Detroit, Dearborn. Ford Motor Company hired many immigrants.
I see.
And, of course, a lot of them
Ford was not a fan of Israel.
That's correct. I'm not sure that was the exact motive, but nevertheless, he got some good labor.
I never liked Fords either.
A lot of my relatives actually worked for the factories, and they would tell me that they were the only ones out of all the thousands of employees who were willing to work underneath the cars where the hot steel is, you know, where the hardest labor is.
Yes.
And so anyway, one family would come and they would get successful and work for a while and save up enough money and bring their other relatives. And of course, generation after generation, come 60s and 70s, started in tens of thousands. And now, of course, hundreds of thousands.
Yes.
And that's how they immigrated to that area. And they started to spread out to New York, to the East Coast, to Minneapolis, of course, north and south, from there.
Oh, yeah. A friend of mine in New York, a Jewish friend, said to me, when I told him there's 50 mosques in Minneapolis, he said, well, there's 100 in New York. Right. So what? And I said, well, it'll be convenient for you when they force you to worship with them.
Right.
And, I mean, we were arguing about the war on terror is a larger picture, but aren't they preaching the same thing in the mosques in America they do in Saudi Arabia?
Well, Zola, absolutely. And one of the reasons why America is so attractive is because here in the States, you have a right to speak, to live, to voice your opinion openly without fear of going to prison. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, 9/11, a lot of people got a little bit more nervous, but nevertheless, all the years before and after, even now, you still have the same basic freedoms that, ironically, you will not find in most of the Muslim countries. You're not going to find that freedom.
Sure.
So, like, for instance, in Egypt, the Islamic Brotherhood is outlawed by the government. And so some are arrested, put in prison, tortured because they speak out against their governments or they have opposing opinions. Mm-hmm. Well, here in the States, you have freedom.
Yep.
So,
boy, if we put everybody in prison and spoke against the government,
right,
we wouldn't have enough.
There would be anybody left.
So there would be senators.
Sure, right. And that's the point.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why. So what's happening in the mosques? They have zero fear of being able to speak and do as they please, garner groups and raise funds to send, to organize. But one thing that most people don't understand is Arabs here do not see that as illegal or wrong. And the reason for that, Zul, was because they look at it like, look, these are our people in the Middle East. They're fighting for a just cause, for a land. What are we doing that's criminal? We're not doing anything criminal. We're just giving money to a just cause. And if it's going, they're being told it's used for political use and military use, or vice versa. But the point is, we know what the end result is, but nevertheless, it's happening. And there's freedom to do it. Even after 9/11, what's really changed? Not much. Not much.
Yeah, you know, it reminded me in the last program, you telling me that you've gone through security at our airports 100 times. I mean, for heaven's sake, your name is Ibrahim Abdullah. You're not exactly going as John Doe.
Right.
And you look the part, and you're big and strong and young, and nobody ever asked you question one.
No.
What kind of security is that?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I don't think anything's changed.
No.
I think some of the Patriot Act and some of the other laws that were enacted after 9/11 were designed to basically catch the money trail, stop the money trail in and out of this country, and to find out who here in the States was using it as a staging ground to support these groups and cultivate them here in the United States to use America as a launching pad also for violent acts within the United States. Now, of course, there have been some small successes from time to time, but could it be successful in our society? Very difficult, because it's a democratic society. It's very difficult. How could you be completely successful when you have a whole generation of people thinking the same thing?
Gosh. And so it's the same jihad, but it happens to be on native soil, and it's a little more subtle.
Right.
You know, I watch these Arabic guys. James Zogby has a talk show, and it's not a talk show, really, because he restates the questions and gets in a political speech of some sort. I mean, I have a talk show. I've done it my whole life, and I know what he's doing. He's kind of twisting, and then he chooses his guest terribly carefully, a Jewish lady Harvard professor with total, you know, anti-Israel views, and talking right. about things like Jewish terrorism, whatever that is. And John Zogby, his brother, is a pollster, and somehow find Kerry was going to win the election, all the rest. It's subtle, but it's a constant drumbeat. Kerr and the Committee for American-Islamic Relations, I watch what they do, and something's going. There is the war on terrorism is going on here, but we don't hear much shooting, so we're paying attention over there. Is that
sure.
it?
That's exactly right. Can we put the finger on a problem here? Where is the problem at? It's happening before our eyes. It's being organized before our eyes, underneath our hands, behind closed doors. Yet, nothing's happening here because we're preoccupied everywhere else. We still don't believe it's happening here.
No, we don't believe
it. We don't believe it. We don't accept it. We're not going to believe it until 9/11 happens again, unfortunately.
And it's going to happen again, isn't it?
It certainly seems that. I wish. I don't want to sound pessimistic.
No,
I don't want that. But it certainly looks that way.
I'm glad you're saying this, because I've been writing it, and I'm not a government official, and I don't have the means to check on all this, and I've never been in a mosque. But it looks like it's happening under the surface, and now that you confirm it, you were in mosque all your life.
Right. Well, of course. You see, what's being taught, for the most part, you see, the way I look at it, though, is the people, Zola, most of them have good intentions. Most of the Arab Muslim people have very good intentions. They want to serve God. They want to worship Him to the best of their ability. What they know is correct. But what's happening in a lot of these institutions is being programmed to have hatred, political biases, land issues, this problem, preoccupying them with issues that have nothing to do with their daily lives.
Yeah.
They have zero effect.
I've often found, you know, I've dealt with Palestinian people in particular for years. I've stood on Greek ships at dock at Turkish ports and Egyptian ports, and with trusted standing on a 20,000-ton vessel with an Egyptian pilot taking it into harbor, along with a whole tour of Christians and Jews going to Israel. And travel people did well. We buy some materials from Palestinian makers in Israel. I've never had a problem. I've never had a problem with any of the Muslims, the Arabs that I've dealt with. Never had a problem on the tour. I've never had anybody back talk about anything. They're just human beings. And I like many of them. I know many of them. I'm speaking acquaintances, obviously.
Yeah, they have. There's a misunderstanding. You see, most people, a lot of people think, oh, all the Muslims think this way, and they're all that way. That's not the case. What you have here, though, you have two. It's a two-sided. It's a double-edged sword. You have the majority of Arab Muslims, in particular, who are indoctrinated with, mixed with religion and culture, because the religion and culture go hand in hand. You cannot separate them, unlike any other faith in the world. You cannot separate these two. So as a result, even the Muslims that are not religious, they follow their faith, they're being ruled, and they follow the traditions of their culture, which is based on the religion. So even though, my point is, even though they're not religious, most of them, they still end up following to the religious theme because of the culture, because they submit to the culture. Now, I hope that doesn't sound confusing.
No, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's essentially what's happening today.
It's different from Judaism and Christianity. I mean, the majority of Jewish people, and I know a lot of them, I'd say pay no attention to Judaism. They don't live that way.
Sure.
They don't keep those laws. Or Christian people, they get to church, but, you know, I wish I could say they live it all the time, or I live it all the time for that matter, but actually they fall very short of that.
Mm.
But the average Muslim, religious or not, as you say, lives his daily life as a Muslim.
That's right. He lives it regardless because of his culture. But most of them have good intentions. They absolutely have good intentions. They want to do the right thing. They have a great zeal for God that will put other cultures and peoples to shame, Zola.
Yes.
If we had their zeal, we could change the world.
It's that something, yeah.
It's true. So, what does that mean? What do we do? What dilemma do we have today? Now, the other portion, the other segment that have bad intentions, that's the problem, because they're influencing the masses and they're giving tidbits. Your land was taken away from you. Strike. You have a political problem here. Strike.
Uh-huh.
Gather together funds. Strike. Constantly put the Jew, for instance, before their eyes. He is the primary enemy. Here is why, and I'll give multiple reasons. So, you see, so it's being embedded in their mind from their youth. It's very hard to change a person when you're born and raised to think this way. Yeah. If you were born and raised to speak English all your life, Zola, and I asked you to speak Chinese at the age of 20, it's going to take some time.
Yes.
It's not going to happen in a week.
Yeah. Well, he's one of the good guys. Ibrahim Abdullah, a saved Muslim. I should say more, a saved terrorist, to tell you the truth. He gave his testimony in the last program, but he was a Palestinian kid that caused every sort of trouble, ended up in Israeli jail, got sprung because he's an American, but I'm glad he's free, and he's really free because he met the Jewish Messiah along the way. Messianics, believers in the Lord in Israel these days than ever before, and when we travel, we go to Messianic congregations. In one of them, the rabbi even called up the men from our tour to read from the Torah. They said, we don't read in Hebrew. He said, I'll say the words in your ear one by one, and you say them. And they had a fabulous experience. There was a guy on that tour who was complaining about things. From there on, he was like an angel. But I bring that up to mention, you know, in my lifetime, there's been tremendous Jewish revival. I mean, the Jews for Jesus is a huge organization, and there's Messianic congregations in every town. But you are saying in your time...
You know, I've heard about that, and I'm happy, very happy.
Yes.
I mean, we're excited. But listen to this, Zola. Islam has been in existence for 1,400 years, and more Muslims have come to know Christ. In other words, have accepted the Bible as the truth in the last 20 years, especially the last five, than all of history combined, than all 1,400 years of history combined. God is moving mightily in the Muslim world as we speak. Its conversion rate is 365,000 a year. Sounds low in relation to the amount, but these are numbers that have never before been seen in the Muslim world. Even though it's low in relation to the population, still we've never seen these numbers, and it's absolutely amazing.
Gosh, that's wonderful. Well, maybe it's true in every community. I mean, in just the Gentile community, or the black or the Hispanic, the same thing's happening because here comes the end and it's time to make a decision. I mean, even an ordinary unbeliever can see that things are in a state.
Yeah, I think God is moving. I think he's moving all over the world. And we've never had access. Muslim countries have not had, just like communist countries, they want to control the masses. That's why, for instance, Russia and China wouldn't allow missionaries, wouldn't allow the gospel, because they want to control the mind of the people.
Yes.
In the same way, the Muslim countries would, generally speaking, would not allow other religious faiths to enter in, because they don't want their people to be corrupted by outside influence. Now, because of satellite and the internet, etc., it's being piped in. And the people, the Muslims, and I've always had, now this part's just an opinion, but I've always believed that if Muslims have given an opportunity to examine the Bible and compare it, they will come to Christ in numbers we have yet to ever see.
Oh, of course they would. Sure they would. Anybody does. You know, we get letters from Saudi Arabia. I'm not kidding. They usually say, well, don't write back or whatever. I mean, they're a little undercover, but they have a satellite dish. Because our program, if it's available here, it's available there. It's the same side of the world, and they can see it.
There's amazing testimonies all over the Muslim world. I wish we had time to get into them. So many amazing testimonies. A man was in the country of Jordan. He fell off a cliff 500 feet straight down in his car. Instinctively, he's a Muslim. Instinctively, he cried out to Isa, which is Arabic for Jesus. He doesn't know why. If you ask him today, he'll tell you, I don't know why, but I called out to Jesus. He walked out of the car, was crushed like a pancake, but he walked out with just a few scratches, gave his life to Christ. He believed that Christ saved him.
Oh, my gosh.
And his life has been transformed. A man in Saudi Arabia.
I had a similar event that you mentioned. Before I was saved, just an ordinary unbeliever, and I, driving in the rain, my car started a hydroplane, and it simply went off the highway, and it's hitting stuff on the shoulder, and I can't stop or anything. And I heard my own voice, not Jesus, but I said, God, dear God, help me, help me. You know, and somehow that car came to stop and dents everywhere and so on, but not even shaken up. I mean, it just couldn't go stop. It was like a hand reached down and stopped the car. And it wasn't long after that I came to the Lord.
Right.
But it wasn't about that, but I reflected back on that, thinking, boy, you know, we know in a tight spot, from whence cometh our help. I don't care if you're Muslim or a red Chinese or whatever.
Right.
You finally know there was a God that made this world, and by gosh, when it comes time to leave it, you really remember.
Well, it certainly seems that God is revealing himself, especially to the Muslim world, and all over the world, of course, but especially, to me, from my perspective, especially the Muslim world, he's doing it all over the place. That the guy I was telling you about in many Muslim countries, but prominent sheikh, which is a religious leader and scholar, and one of the, I cannot tell you what country and city, but well, let's just put it this way, one of the major mosques in all the Middle East.
Yes.
And long story short, he gave his life to Christ one day. He kept his title and turned over his preaching duties to the other shuikh, because they required many shuikh to operate this mosque, because they had 50,000 adherents.
Oh.
And so he turned over his preaching duties in order to keep his title, so that he had free access in and out of the country to do what? To bring Bibles and tracts back into the country, which are prohibited, to pass them out to people in his country. It's amazing story after story.
Yeah, there's a parallel story of a rabbi in a European city in World War I time who came to the Lord, I mean, irresistibly. And he tried to stand there in the pulpit every Saturday and preach Jesus Christ to a Jewish congregation. And of course, after a time, they ran him out of town. He, when he died, they would not bury him in the Jewish cemetery, this sort of thing. But my gosh, a few people heard what he said, you know. If you confess me before men, you know.
All right. He planted the seed.
Yeah. Let me go back to the mosque you went to as you grew up and so on. Well, what would happen? You must have seen somebody come to Christ. What would happen in the mosque about that?
You mean, are you saying...
Well, a parishioner, just somebody who came to services, and he says, well, you know what, I believe in the Bible now.
Okay, in other words, people that are in the mosque now,
who
were formerly Muslims. I've had wonderful opportunities to talk to many Muslims, and I've seen, witnessed many Muslims come to Christ with my own eyes, and been there and have helped many see the differences between the two. You cannot force anyone to convert. You can only present the evidence. And I know many people who have.
Yeah.
And, of course, I cannot name them, so I'll let you know that. Because there's many repercussions, unfortunately, in our culture for conversion. A lot of times, especially outside America, the penalty is death. But in America, it's not so easy to carry it out.
Death? Wow.
Yeah, unfortunately.
The Jews pretend that the person died, but the Muslims really take care of it.
Absolutely. Unfortunately.
And then what if an imam or somebody important that has happened comes to a belief? Does he try to do what that European rabbi did?
Yeah, you allow me to tell you a three-second story?
Yeah, please.
In another country in the Middle East, there were 17 in a row. This just happened the last year. All 17 were imams, all 17. And, 15 of the 17 were killed one after the other with a note after each one. The 16th person was warned that if he spoke again about the Bible in that country, he would be killed. He defied, of course, they killed him. The last one left, came back a month later dressed as a something else so he could conceal his identity to continue the work of the passing out the gospel. That's how much zeal a Muslim who converts to Christ as a Jew who converts to Christ would have. They have a tremendous amount of zeal. They want to serve the Lord. That's how much they love their people. But does it happen? Absolutely. It's happening every day.
After 16 people are killed, he comes back in disguise and starts to witness. I mean, I had a missionary on the program once whose field was the Sinai Desert, he said. I said, my gosh, you must get some persecution out there. He said, oh, I do. He said, but persecution is the proper exercise of the church. Christians get weak and flabby because they don't get enough persecution.
Right.
It's very interesting. I always cite University of Kansas at Pittsburgh where I spoke one time. There was a Muslim professor my age in the front row, a professor of chemistry, I believe it. He sat and listened to what I said, Israel's right to the land, and then a question period in which Muslim girls with headdresses, the usual questions and so on. Everything was fine, but suddenly he lost his cool completely, stood up and screamed, you are the terrorist.
Right. Right. Well, it is true. I'm sure you're familiar with that debate in Durban, South Africa. Actually, it was supposed to be a dialogue. Yeah. 11,000 people with Ahmed Didan and Josh McDowell. Well, Josh McDowell will be the first to tell you. The government had to escort him out of the facility because they tried to kill him. They didn't take him to the airport and get him out of the country. But as a side note, Ahmed Didat's brother left with Josh McDowell after this three-hour, if you want to call it, debate. Left with Josh McDowell for 3 weeks on the circuit. He was so moved by the debate.
Really? Yeah. Josh McDowell was a great witness.
It was fabulous. Absolutely fantastic.
I remember him as a kid when I was in Campus Crusade.
Right. But the violence, why the violence?
Doesn't it occur to the ordinary citizens, if we keep having to kill these guys and they're willing to die, there must be something to this?
Right, well, that's the issue. That's the problem we have. What I'm saying is we need to be able to communicate, just to talk, without the violence.
Yeah.
But where does the violence come from? How do you stop the violence? These are questions we all want to know.
How about, Christians and Jews, and don't kill people, Buddhists don't kill people.
Our faith doesn't call us to kill people. Man, unfortunately, because of our fallen nature, we do things that are wrong against God's will. We're the ones who sin, but God didn't design it that way. The Bible doesn't tell us to do things. Unfortunately, in part of our traditions and faith and culture, it tells us that we have a right to do it. We have a right to kill all those who resist Islam after being warned. That is a problem, because many Muslim scholars will say, well, that's not true, you're misinterpreting it, and many will say, well, that is true, take it literally. So you have a divide. You have many voices in the Middle East speaking to the people. That's where the confusion comes in the Muslim world. That's why some Muslims will say, no, it's not true, and some Muslims will say, yes, it is true. So how do we know? So I encourage everyone to go and examine even just the surface study of the Quran, to look and see for themselves.